Guide to Art, Activism, and Culture. I'm your host, Zoe Elena. This podcast is brought to you by the Aerogram Center for Arts and Culture, bringing the voices of today's creativity to you. Before we begin, please consider donating by going to our website at www.aerogram.org/support. Your contributions are why our events and programs like these are possible with no paywall, so that everyone can participate for free worldwide. Thank you. Today's topic, a new lens. Joining me is Maryland-based printmaker Juan Esparza, who spoke with me about their artistic process, reclaiming Mexican stereotypes, and the struggles with representation and privilege to pursue art.
Welcome, Juan.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Juan. I'm an artist currently based in Maryland. I work primarily with printmaking, and I've really been working with printmaking since I've been in college.
And we met at the Maryland Institute College of Art in undergrad.
Yeah. How is that what we met? Was it through HLSU?
I think it was. I don't think we had shared any classes together. I'm trying to remember now, but I think it was through HLSU, which was a student organization that you and I both participated in for 4-3 years.
Yeah, I think it was through HLSU because I met Inga in one class that we had together. And she said, hey, you should show up. And I said, okay. And then, yeah, I just started showing up.
I feel like a lot of the friends that I've met through that organization, I have featured on the Aerogram Center. So I'm excited to also now be featuring you as well, which is a body of work that you made during your senior thesis at MICA. And a lot of the work that you submitted explores identity and memory and heritage. Can you explain the general thesis of that work?
Yeah. So a lot of the ideas that I was working with was referencing going to Mexico, being Mexican, and things that I didn't think I would miss. Like speaking Spanish was something that I would miss all the time. So I really felt homesick, and maybe not even homesick. I just culture sick, where all the little Spanish TV on all the time, the music in Spanish, speaking the language, everything was just missing. That's when I really felt more connected by being disconnected, because I realized how important it was to me. And since then, I've just continued working with that idea and being really nostalgic now as I look back on time that I've spent in Mexico and the important things that I feel I need to highlight.
Those feelings come when you're in Maryland reflecting on your time being in Mexico. Do you have that feeling when you're in Mexico wishing that you were back in Maryland, or is it just sort of like a one way?
Well, definitely I do feel that way, but it's more so because we don't have Wi-Fi or the cell phone signal isn't as good. But when I'm there, time just passes by way too quick. But as I've gotten older, I've really started to realize how much I like being there, and the time that I want to spend there just isn't enough. I just couldn't spend any more time there, but I'm already looking forward to take some time and spend more, maybe hopefully about a month or so there.
Yeah, that's a good chunk of time. And your work specifically uses themes of animals. In your exhibition, you talked a lot about farming, but also the significance of the donkey and using cultural stereotypes, but as a way to kind of reclaim them. Can you explain more of that as well?
Yeah. So I've always liked animals ever since I was in high school, actually taking my first art classes. I don't think there's too much of a deep meaning there. I just think they're really cool. But as I've gotten older and realizing the stereotypes and, like you mentioned, reclaiming them, because there is always a negative connotation to donkeys of working hard, but it's always hard labor and it's not necessarily celebrated, but it is something that I think needs to be highlighted because there isn't anything inherently wrong with hard work. And it's stuff that needs to be done. Agriculture is the main source of income, whether it's agriculture, as in farming or raising animals, livestock. That's really the main way of living back in my hometown. Animals were always present one way or another, whether it was my grandpa had them or I would see my uncles have them, or just walking by the street, you would just see animals. So it's always been present. And as I've gotten older, I've started thinking more critically about the animals mm-hmm. and their role that they take place culturally.
It is sort of like a hot bun topic. I think a very politicized topic that you're kind of exploring, like the underlying, or something that's sort of present in your work, but that isn't sort of the forefront of it. And I really like that connection, like a social issue, but also something that's also spiritual.
Yeah, I think I really like the way that you brought that up because in large part, something that I have to navigate when I'm creating art, and this is what it is that I can say, what I can't say, what's okay for me to say, and what I think isn't okay for me to say. Because mm-hmm. even though I am Mexican, I've grown up in the United States since I was 3 years old. So I have a degree of removal from the culture, even though we would travel back as often as we could, sometimes year by year, sometimes every 2 years. I've only ever been in Mexico for a snapshot. So at most a month or two out of the year, but then there's 10 other months and there's countless things going on at that time, especially because of the time that we would go. Mm-hmm. We would always go during the summer. So it's the tourist time. It's when all the kids are out of school. It's when people ask for time off. So it's very different seeing it versus my last trip, which was early November. And I mean, it's completely out of season when it comes to people traveling, because it's after the summer and then it's before the holiday season. So currently we're in between Christmas and New Year's. So right now is peak, where people are traveling there, visiting family. Some of them stay for both. Some only stay for either Christmas or New Year's. But seeing it in November, I mean, it's so quiet. There's mm-hmm. so little going on. But at the same time, there's still so much going on for the people that live there. So mm-hmm. as a tourist, because that's the way I see myself, I'm only a tourist. I've only gotten snapshots. So it's hard for me to navigate what it is that I can say and what I can actually comment on, because I don't know. I generally don't know what's going on.
You're talking about representation, but also how you're using art as a way to kind of bridge both identities of being an artist, but also being you're calling it a tourist, going from two places at once. And I am interested in how art is part of that process of thinking through these ideas. What is your process when you're thinking about split personalities?
When it comes to process, I have always been an artist that works very intuitively. I don't like having things totally planned out 100%. Or if I do have it planned out, I always allow myself to adjust things as I go. So since I work primarily with printmaking, it can be a little bit difficult. If I carve something out of wood, I can't necessarily go back. I always allow myself to work through it and to change the drawing as I go. When an idea comes to mind, I like to make lists. I'm old school, so I always write things down pen and paper. I don't like having things really digital because there's a degree of removal there, but I'll just make a list of different animals, different things that I like, and then write a little bit about why they're significant. For example, when I think about farm animals, start making a list of what I see. So there's chickens, there's donkeys, cows, bulls, goats, sheep. And then from there, start picking out the significance of them. So there is a bit of research, because sometimes they're nicknames for other things, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's sayings that reference them. I start out by writing. And then from there, I just allow myself to draw, look up pictures to see what they actually look like. Always allow myself to be playful with it.
Something that I was thinking about looking at your exhibit and sitting with your work was looking at how the donkey as a representation of you, is that? Or
yeah, it's funny that you bring that up, because there's always, I would always hear my mom, ay, que burro eres, right? So it's basically, it's like, oh, you're so donkey if you're going to translate it. But mm-hmm. basically, it's you're not listening. I would just think of myself as it. So kind of personifying it. And then, but I did see a lot of myself in it, but then, or people that I knew. So there's also personification of my grandpa, of my uncles, in a broader sense, the people that I've seen growing up. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a sense of self there.
And some pieces you've titled in Spanish, but others not. And I'm wondering, I think because you've had these specific phrases in some works, I'm wondering how you're kind of bridging, I guess, the Spanish culture with your art.
I don't think it necessarily has to be completely literal. Sometimes the titles just come to me easier in Spanish, mm-hmm. or I'm thinking of a specific, there's something I'm specifically referencing, or a specific memory, nostalgia that I want to reference, and it just happens to be in Spanish. It just comes down to the piece and then how I'm working on it.
It's a piece that I'm just kind of pulled up quickly in the calle. It's the same image of a donkey, a humanoid donkey, surrounded by a crowd of people, but it's printed in different colors. Can you also share the significance of these, of the color choices that you use? Because I know it comes with an interesting story.
So for, and like I am, basically the color choice that I have, it's specifically the green and yellow. That one's referencing seca. So maseca, it's what they use to make tortillas. So I was referencing that because we eat tortillas with everything. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I see all the time. It was in the center of our small town. So as I'm driving to the store, I see it. On the way back home, I see it. But then there's also pink with pink, which is a reference to my uncle's house, because for some reason, the house was painted pink. Mexico is known for really bright colors. So that's where the neon green comes in with the pink and yellow. It's just, again, nostalgia and referencing back either in buildings or the general idea of colors that I see. The use of multiple colors, one, it's a way of creating addition when it comes to printing. And then there's the idea of once you start getting to print, where it can exist in multiple periods of time. So a memory can also exist in multiple periods of time, or you can see it multiple different ways as you're getting older. So it's just highlighting that as well.
Because memory is not reliable and it changes so often.
Yeah, memory is super, super reliant on what's currently going on with you as well, because you'll remember things differently depending on what's going on. Mm-hmm. So if you're super stressed out about something and you think back to a time, I don't know, last year, you'll start to pick out, oh, I was doing the same thing back then. Whereas if you were to look back on it in a couple months when you don't have that going on, you're not going to pick out the same detail. So memory isn't reliable and it does change. Also, as you realize why certain things are happening, why certain things happen at a period of time, and you start to process that as well.
Does it come easier to do your work after a trip coming back from Mexico, or is it something that you sit with for a while before you feel that inspiration to make a body of work or a print?
It's something that I work with. Mm-hmm. But usually what I do is I'll make a list, like I had mentioned before, with different ideas, different stuff that I like, and I'll just work out sketches. And then sometimes I'll be doing whatever it is that I'm doing, and I'll be like, oh, I could do this for that. So then I'll go back and edit the drawing a little bit. So it just kind of depends on the piece itself, but I don't usually sit down and say, okay, you've got an hour to make this, or to plan this out. It takes its time and I let it take its course.
So you sit with a memory for a while, and that is part of the process where you think about what you want to say and how you want to represent your home, also your identity, and how that is translated through into a process.
Yeah, I guess you could say it is process-based. I work a specific way to really highlight an idea, but I do, sometimes things just need to cook more, or sometimes you have an idea and it's just not working right. So you have to let it simmer. You got to let it cook for a little bit, adjust it, and then it works out. So it depends on the idea. It depends on the piece.
And how do you see your work evolving, or what you hope your work will evolve into as you grow?
So something that I've been looking at a lot is expanding mediums that I work in. Something that I've always struggled with is when I start getting comfortable, I immediately feel like I need to make a switch. So I want to expand out mediums. I would love to start doing things with textiles or fabric, embroidery possibly, because I think it lends itself very well going from printmaking to embroidery, because it's very process-based itself. You spend a lot of time, little details. So it works well with my personality. But ideal-wise, I've spent a lot of time thinking about my time spent in Mexico, but then on the other cultural side of it, I've lived most of my life here in the United States. So I want to start highlighting that growing up in a Mexican household instead of just the visits to Mexico. because there's a lot of day-to-day things that I see as cultural, right? Mm-hmm. Either television, so highlighting media, I think about the saying, so maybe illustrating that, food, traditions, there's a lot for me to unpack with that. And the other idea that I was thinking of is the in-between, because growing up, the way that we would mostly go to Mexico, because we were a large family, so we're a total six, right? So it's my parents and then my three sisters. We would always drive down to Mexico. So there's always the, you know, there's the United States and there's Mexico, but then there's the in-between of us going there. And that's a whole thing in itself, where you're stuck in a car for 2.5 days with five other people. And yeah, there's a lot of landmarks that aren't landmarks that we see as, okay, we're getting close. And then the whole border situation is a whole other thing, because there's definitely been some experiences there to unpack. So those are the two general directions that I'm thinking about, focusing more so on the United States and being Mexican here. And then also the in-between of getting to and from.
Whole U.S.-Mexican border is such a fascinating subject in itself, that it's this invisible line drawn in the sand, but that it has real consequences that affect people every single day.
It is a way of, how do I say it, of blending the cultures, because privilege takes a part of it. I'm very thankful and grateful to be able to say that I can go between the two, and that's not the case for, you know, so many people. And there's a lot of things growing up, seeing things, I mean, literally seeing people trying to cross, but they're not allowed to while I'm in the course waiting to go, where they just check your passports and you're good to go. So there's a lot to unpack. And as I've gotten older, I started realizing the impact of them. There's things that I feel like I can say, but are there things that I should say for others? And yeah, privilege is a big thinking point for me.
In private conversation, you've spoken about the conflict that you feel as not just someone who has the ability to travel freely between one country to another, but also that you're an artist, but that you come from a traditional Latino household, but also being able to pursue art, trying to find that sense of belonging.
That in itself is a whole can of worms to unpack, because being first generation, right? First generation is so broad. There's the most baseline typical definition where it's you're the first generation of your family to go to college. So first generation is so hard to navigate in itself, because you can get different amounts of help, but people want to put everything in one basket when that's just not the case.
And also internal conflict of having to justify art as a career choice, that there's more fluidity, and that creates, I think just a lot of internal conflict. And I experienced that myself, because it's about the hustle more than anything.
Yeah, without a doubt. I wanted to do art. I wouldn't have studied. I wouldn't have really gone to school had I not studied art, I'm sure. But I started out trying out illustration. Didn't like that. Trying out graphic design. Hated that even more. And it wasn't until I got into fine art where I really decided, okay, this is what I like, and this is what I wanted to pursue. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that struggle of wanting a proper career, quote unquote. But yeah, I mean, you can make it work for sure as an artist. It's just like you were saying, it's about the hustle. There's always an element of guilt too, because I'm here in the States, I'm studying art. Meanwhile, there's people back home that want to be a nurse, that want to be a doctor, who can't even, who don't have opportunity for it. So there's always an element of guilt.
Also from experience, looking at how little representation there is for Latino or Latinx artists out there trying to make it a name for themselves. Something I'm interested in is how you're navigating, or how you're thinking about who your audience is.
My audience is always going to be very Mexico-centric. So people who are from Mexico, or, you know, have lived in Mexico, people who can relate, who come from a small town, who have similar experiences. That's always been the audience that I have in mind, right? And if it reaches more, that's good. But that's, at the very least, that's who I want to make art for. Because I think of my parents as sort of the audience that I want to get, my parents, my cousins, where if they're able to understand my art, and if they're able to say, oh yeah, like I understand this, then that's a successful piece for me. Right. It's not about somebody from down the street get it, right? Because they might not have the same experience. And to me, that's never mattered. It's always been with the idea of, can my parents understand it? Can my cousins understand it? Because that's really what the experience is about. It's about Mexico and navigating that. So my answer has always been that. I've always thought of my parents as the big audience and then framing it from there. So
yeah, it's a celebration of shared culture, shared identity.
Yeah, getting your work out there, it's super, super hard, right? And everybody wants something different out of their work. Some people create art more so as a side thing. I think that's where I'm at currently. Mm-hmm. Other people, they need it as their job. So they're going to approach it very differently, right? Like, I care about people who have a shared experience, who have a similar upbringing, who may be feeling the same way. That's what I want to make art for.
Were you a curatorial studies or were you working?
I was not curatorial studies, but I was part of the exhibitions department. So that was my work study job. So a couple of days a week, I was helping either put up shows, take down shows. I was gallery watching, whatever it was in the gallery space, we were doing that. So yeah, it was really interesting being exposed to that side of it, or seeing the work that was coming in. I think because I was exposed to that, I really felt a little bit disheartened, disillusioned with art. So after graduating, I just didn't really feel like creating. And I think a lot of it was just the work that was being put up just wasn't what I wanted to see.
Working in the curatorial department, how that shaped your work in any way, what do you want to see when you're in an exhibition space? And
I don't know. I mean, I think accessibility is a big issue with art, because with a lot of pieces, you need to know something about the process, or you need to have some sort of background knowledge to understand it. Where in a broader sense, that shouldn't be a thing. Art should be accessible. Art made for artists when it should be made for the people. Right? Whether like whoever your audience is, right? But it should be made for a broader sense, not just people who work in galleries or curators or other artists. That's not that I believe that art shouldn't be made just for that. Obviously, if that's who you want to make it for, that is your decision. But in a broader sense, art should be accessible, and it should be for whoever wants to see it, or if you just happen to be walking by. That was another thing, right? A lot of these galleries on campus, you had to be on campus to see, so it just wasn't accessible. Right? So I think that was my biggest takeaway, is art is hard to understand. And it's not taking away anything from the art if it's not accessible, right? So if the art is accessible, it's not taken away from it. You shouldn't need a degree to understand the intricacies and all the details for it. Obviously, you can take away from it, but you shouldn't need to know everything about a medium to get an art.
So accessibility would be an artist who's drawing from like a very specific moment in history, or is over complicating their artist statement?
I think a lot of it is the over being overly complicated with art. I think you can use a lot of buzzwords, and this goes for anything, right? If you're reading an article, you will see a lot of buzzwords.
Yeah.
Where I'll be honest, I'm reading something, I need to go Google some words because I'm just not understanding it. So it's just not as accessible for people. So it comes down to art statements. It comes down to the piece itself sometimes. You know, like it's hard to navigate that as well, because sometimes your ideas just genuinely revolve around process, but that's not the most accessible thing. But then it's framed in a way that it's supposed to be accessible. It's a super fine line. And I just think that a lot of people weren't aware of it and weren't conscious of that, of having to navigate that.
I think because it's always been seen in galleries, unless you step outside of it, then you're suddenly aware of the trends that are happening. I can definitely speak to going to many gallery openings or exhibitions and being alienated from a space or from an artist. As you're saying, it's just inaccessible in some way.
So I just started being a teacher actually just a couple of weeks ago. And let me tell you, it's a struggle, but something that I have, and I've been thinking about constantly is contemporary artists and presenting that to my classes, because art is a very antique thing. Who do we think of when you think of art, right? You think Mona Lisa, You think of all these dead artists who are fantastic. There's countless artists that are currently making that are super, super great, are really addressing issues like accessibility and represent, but they're just not being talked about. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I try to highlight. We're at a point where art has never been more accessible, but at the same time, it feels very alienated because social media is one of the, it's a blessing and a curse, but there's so many artists that are currently making now, it's so easy to see their work because there's online galleries, there's the artist pages themselves. So why not highlight them? Why not bring that to the forefront? Definitely you need to learn art history, but that's, you need to also learn about what's going on now. And I think now it's the best time because you can do anything. I mean, really, there's never been a time where every art movement is currently taking place right now. You can be the classical painter and that works, but you can also be super conceptual and that works. You can take sculpture in whatever direction if you want, functional form, vessel, ceramics, or if you want to be completely off the wall and work with whatever medium, right? So that's something to be aware of where now you can really do anything, but why is that not being talked about still? Mm-hmm.
I think given a chance, like what would you like to see? I think besides accessibility, how would you?
I think of community that I grew up in, having a place to display art is the first step. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see more small gallery places and just art being displayed in restaurants, in common settings.
Another artist that I interviewed spoke a lot about art being just accessible, that it should be, that every person should be able to purchase a piece of art for their home.
There's crafts fairs around here. There's art fairs. So I've tried to go to that and just seeing art for sale. And it's, you know, and it's inexpensive. So, and I see people buying it, this and that. But I think making art accessible, part of it has to go with price. As well, you don't need to spend $5,000 on a painting. You can buy a print, and prints are fine. So I think the way of going about it, where you can only have art if it's original, that's also not a healthy mentality. It comes down to honesty, and then how are you trying to just fill space, or is that how you work? Accessibility just raises so many questions about art and about what the next step is, because there's so many things you need to do to make it accessible. There isn't just one solution.
Who are some of the people that you're looking at, or what types of readings are you doing?
I don't think I'm looking at anybody in particular now. It just more so whatever I'm feeling that day. So if I want to look at, I'm thinking sculpturally, I will look up different sculptors. I'll just browse social media. I think that's the biggest inspiration for me currently, because there's so much good work out there and there's such a variety of styles in any medium. So I look at printmaking a lot because that's what I like. And there's so many different ways of handling the medium. Some are very, very classical, traditional wood engraving, but then some of them are much more abstract, process-based. So I'll just hop on Instagram and look. That's really where what I'm looking at now, because that you'll see when they post it. So a lot of stuff, you'll see the progress, and it was made last week. So, you know, it's very current, very contemporary, and not just something that was made that is quote unquote contemporary, but was made in the 90s, right? Because those 20 years, everything has changed. I mean, I also have a big interest in clothing and sneakers. I love sneakers, love clothing. So I'll browse that. And then the customization and how they handle that, that in itself is an art form. So I just hop on Instagram and look, and just go down the rabbit hole until I find something that's cool.
I personally like about Instagram, I think when I'm researching artists, is that it's from their own words and it's done informally. So it's not all of that art statement jargon.
There's definitely something autobiographical about it, but there's also a lot of them that are just posting the process and it's a very raw artwork. For some people, you only see the finished work, but for others, you see the process and not so much finished work. So then that's what's important to them. Yeah, I love Instagram. I think it's one of the good things about social media where it's easy to get exposed to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Just don't spend 8 hours on it.
And you spoke before a little bit about going to art fairs, and something that you and I had started, you know, before the Aerogram Center was, I guess, this collective that we were trying to find. a way to support artists, but ourselves. You had graduated a year before me. I graduated and we were both kind of feeling like there wasn't that sense of community because we didn't have the facilities that we were used to at MICA. And it became a big deterrent, I think, in holding ourselves accountable for being artists. And again, that guilt, that internal guilt that we feel because we weren't making art. And so like, how do you justify that kind of degree?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the facilities at school, it's super nice. And anybody that's in college listening to this, you're going to definitely feel it when you leave, because the facilities, no matter how good or bad they are, they're still going to be better than whatever you have at home. So that's one of the hardest things. And then just having a space to work, because working in your bedroom is really hard, or working in your house, even if you have a separate room or it's on a different floor, like the basement or anything, it's so hard to remove yourself because you still know your home. But at school, we were given studios, what, junior year? Some people got it all junior year or half of junior year. And then senior year, you receive at least a space in a big shared studio space, which was awesome. You get to see so much different work all the time. You get to just have a space to work in that's removed from your house. Because working in your apartment, when it's late, you have your roommates there. They're playing Mario Kart. You don't want to do art. You just generally don't. There is a degree of self-discipline, but having a separate space, it just helps you think differently. Because then you also have other responsibilities. Then you have to get a job to support the art making, but then you're tired.
It's definitely a safety net being in a school because you were paying for that. And I guess the earlier iterations of what this art collective was sort of like a book club where it would be a group of artists that would be like once a month and share what you're doing. And
yeah, because the idea of a book club, right? You get assigned a book, you read it, and then you check in about it. So having a similar art club or collective, you kind of hold each other accountable to be making, or maybe not making, but you're researching or you're doing something in the creative process. So you kind of hold yourself accountable for it, as well as holding each other accountable. And I think that's super helpful. But it's hard when you're an adult just finding time for stuff. But I think now, because this was all way before COVID and before Zoom took off and everything, I think now would probably be the easiest time to get it set up because there's already so much legwork done for it.
Do you have any final thoughts? Are there any projects that you're working on?
Right now, I'm just currently trying to figure out different mediums. I want to do something with patches because I like clothes, like I mentioned. And I think that'd be a good way of also presenting art, stick it on a denim jacket. So I'm just working on really expanding out the mediums, maybe going back to painting since I've been so adverse to it. Just thinking of ideas, how I can present them differently, where I can present them. Do what I want to present them, because that's a whole other conversation.
And that's all we can do right now. But it gives you something to like focus on when you're stuck inside.
I have been your host, Soy Elena. Join us on our next episode. And in the meantime, be sure to follow us on social media to learn about opportunities, events, and more.